We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Here's your host, John Halpin.
Hey, everybody, it's John Halpin. Welcome to the Monday, November 27th edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by FanDuel. Derek Van Riper's with me today. We hope you had a happy Thanksgiving weekend. We talked to you after Thanksgiving. We talked to you on Friday. But Derek, calling in from, or on with me from Wisconsin, Brett Hundley, even though you lost, moral victories are no good. Brett Hundley was actually not bad.
No, he was fine. I mean, I think the only real sequence where there was some concern was the last drive the Packers had. Like they forced a stop late. They got the ball back, and then a couple things went wrong. Hundley got sacked by TJ Watt. Jamal Williams ran out of bounds on a play, stopped the clock. I mean, just stupid things that ultimately probably were the difference, but you just got the feeling watching that game, even though the Packers played well offensively, that they weren't going to come up with a big stop when they needed one late.
Right.
And they didn't get it. And that's just what it is. So I don't know. I mean, I guess this is kind of like the post Chicago reaction where you see Hundley's numbers and you think, all right, well, he looks okay. He hit Randall Cobb on that broken play. I made a few other nice throws as well. And it's not like he's lacking tools. It's just the range of outcomes with him is all over the place. And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, feeling the pass rush, being able to make those second and third reads consistently. It seems like that's an issue, and you can't get on the same page with Jordy Nelson. I mean, Jordy Nelson continues to be unusable, but Davante Adams is perfectly fine, it appears. His price has been falling in DFS, and he's actually been a pretty solid value throughout the time Hundley's been the starter.
Right, and Jordy's dead to us.
It's weird because I still don't think it's like a full like skills regression for him. I mean, if Rodgers were out there, maybe Nelson would be the 1A, 1B and now have that B roll or something. That's totally possible. But I think he's still drawing more top corner attention than Adams. And with that, you know, Hundley's more comfortable throwing to Adams. So, yeah, you come away kind of like feeling better about the Packers than you did going in. But then you think, well, okay, I felt good about them coming out of that Chicago game, and then the Baltimore game happened. So unless Baltimore's defense is truly Super Bowl caliber, I think we still have to be a little bit hesitant to buy in a lot on what the Packers are doing. I mean, the good news for them, the Bucs at home this week and the Browns on the road the week after. So you never know. I mean, two wins are possible at least. And if you're a Packer fan, you're just crossing your fingers that Hundley can keep them in the mix for maybe that last wild card spot, and Rodgers makes it back at the end of the year to put them over the top.
Right. And look, yesterday you got some encouraging signs on that, so we'll see. All right, folks, we're going to go through Sunday's games. Just a few notes on each. If you have any more questions about them, you think we miss anything, whatever it might be, tweet us. I'm at JHalpin37. Derek's at Derek Van Riper. You can also tweet us at RotoWire. And catch up on the news. Well, we'll talk about some of the injuries at RotoWire NFL. Bucks Falcons first. The Falcons are picking it up a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if they're if it's going to be them or if there's going to be one other team that we're sleeping on a little bit in the NFC. Maybe it ends up being one of the wild card teams, and maybe the Falcons are one of the wild card teams. But up to 7-4 now. You know, the Saints coming off a loss yesterday, only a one game difference now between those teams. The Bucks, of course, are kind of out of it at this point. And the Panthers, I mean, it makes you wonder, is this easily the toughest division in the league right now? Because you've got three teams that are legit contenders to win the NFC. I mean, whichever one of those teams, if one of them doesn't make it, whichever one does get a wild card is going to be the trendy playoff stack when you start looking at your playoff fantasy leagues.
Well, you're going to have, you might have both wild cards from there.
Could.
I mean, right now, if you look at the other divisions, I mean, the Seahawks would be the one, the other team in that mix, right? But in the North, Packers, Lions, right? The East, no way. I mean, you know, after the Eagles, they kind of stink. So I don't know. I think you might get. I mean, we'll see what happens with, you know, Saints Panthers this week, but I think there's a pretty decent chance that you could get both wild cards out of the South.
Yeah, it's shaping up that way, and we'll see if someone can get hot and shake things up a little bit. And again, yeah, the Rams Seahawks situation is the best case for a team outside of the South picking up a wild card, seeing how that could play out. But yeah, you look at the Falcons, things are starting to click. Julio had a monster game. I mean, the thing about owning Julio Jones, and I think I said this back during draft season, it's great if total points over the course of the season are your goal. It's maddening if you're trying to win head-to-head matchups. It's been that way, it seems like, forever. I'm happy I've got him where I do, because one of those leagues is the steak league, and it is all about total points as far as whether or not you're eating or paying for meals at the end of the season. But why can't we just get more consistency from him? He's clearly still a very good, if not still elite talent. And yet the production is just weirdly erratic for a player of that caliber.
Right. I agree with you 100% on that. And it's not all about, you know, some teams just take him away. It doesn't seem to be that. Otherwise here, when Devontae Freeman comes back, and we don't know when that will be, he was out for his, I believe, second straight game with a concussion. Has Tevin Coleman earned more work? I mean, do you think it goes back to the way it was, which was kind of a, I think it was a 2/3, 1/3 kind of deal in favor of Freeman, but Tevin Coleman's pretty good back.
Yeah, I mean, they paid Devontae Freeman a lot of money, though, that contract extension. So I think as long as he's healthy, he's still the guy, and probably by a similar margin. Maybe they go from 65-35 to 60-40 or something like that. But this is a nice luxury to have. I mean, when you have two backs that can carry the load like that, it really goes a long way towards keeping them both fresh for later in the year. And if one goes down, you know, you have a guy that keeps your running game going at a high level. So I like what Atlanta's been doing these last few weeks. Matt Ryan finally having a big game, lost a TD to Mohamed Sanu because one of the Julio Jones TDs was a 51 yarder from Sanu. So if you're a Matt Ryan owner, you're a little frustrated by that, but you know, it's the little things, I guess. And you look at the rest of the options in Atlanta. I mean, the two backs, Julio, and then Sanu is kind of viable. I still don't trust Austin Hooper. I mean, I think he's more of like a desperation GPP.
Yes.
You got injuries maybe in season long, and you look at the matchup and it checks out, but he's still one of those guys that I want a little bit more from, and I just don't think we're going to see it consistently down the stretch here in 2017.
All right, and Falcons have the Vikings coming to town this week, so not easy for any of them. On the other side of this one, a little bit of news. Doug Martin, concussion. too early. We're doing this again, 9 o'clock Eastern on Monday morning. So we're not sure what's up with Doug Martin. We'll find out during the week. They're playing at Green Bay this week. The other thing there, we also don't know the status of Jameis Winston for week 13. It would seem that, not that we're worried about, you know, low level tight end ones, but if Cameron Brate's ever going to do anything again, it's pretty clear right now that he needs Jameis Winston to do it, right?
Yeah, OJ Howard's probably taken on a larger role, like, over the time that Winston's been hurt too. I mean, as a rookie tight end, his role increasing over the second half isn't that much of a surprise. Atlanta's pass defense is actually pretty good too. So when you look at these results, I mean, don't be totally surprised they kept Fitzpatrick well under 7 yards per attempt. That's what Atlanta's been doing as a defense pretty consistently throughout this season. When their pass rush is healthy, they get a lot of pressure, and that goes a long way to help them too. As far as the Bucs go otherwise, I mean, Peyton Barber scored twice, but only had 5 carries for 7 yards.
Right.
So I wonder if Martin were to miss time, will they go back to Jacquizz Rodgers, or will they actually try something different with Peyton Barber?
I would. Again, this is one of those things where we look and we say, well, we've seen Jacquizz Rodgers, and we know that there's kind of a low ceiling there. And that Peyton, why not try Peyton Barber? But then I always go back to, it's the same conversation we've had about the Giants with Davis Webb. It's like, well, they know what they see. Like, they know Peyton Barber better than we do. So I don't know. I would hope that they would try Peyton Barber. It would seem to be something that's worth a shot. But I guess we're going to have to listen to the Bucks on that. Browns Bengals next. Joe Mixon. Hooray. It finally happened.
It did. And I mean, I thought the volume would be there. I thought it maybe would be less efficient than it was, because Cleveland's been good against the run this year, despite all their struggles otherwise. But Mixon finally cashed in, and I liked the Bengals a lot. I mean, I had Dalton and Green paired up instead of a lot of Mixon exposure in DFS. But hopefully for those who have been waiting patiently, he was still in the lineup as an RB2 or as a flex. Does that change your perception of Mixon going forward, or do you think it was a case where they beat up on a team that now at 0-11 is just maybe starting to get a little worn out for the season? It's good to be stout against the run the way they have been, but I wonder if as they go down the stretch, if they start to break a little more often as they sink even further.
I think it was a game where we learned that I would tend to think that they're going to try to build on this, that they're going to say, okay, we're not going to go back to the 12 carry games here unless we're losing. And we're going to try to, you know, have this offense focus on this guy a little more. You know, that's a guess. I think that's probably what they've hoped to do. And that this yesterday you looked at, because the Browns, like we've talked about before, the Browns run defense is not that bad, or has not been that bad. So I think this is something to build on. I also want to talk about, on the other side of that, I mean, Crowell had a nice game, but I want to talk about Duke, because he didn't have a huge game, but last week the Browns talked a little bit about someone, I forget who it was, I don't know if it was the offensive coordinator, was quoted as basically saying, we know he's one of our playmakers and we want to get the ball in his hands more. You're like, we want to get the ball in his hands as much as possible. So yesterday, Duke goes 6, and so he has 10 touches. And before that, last week's game against the Jags, he didn't have a lot, but I feel like they might be, I don't know. Am I reaching, thinking they're going to try to get him the ball more? And then yesterday was, you know, I mean, 10 touches wasn't a lot. It's okay. But Duke, I feel like, is one of those guys that people ask about every week. You know, he's always on the fringe. He's always maybe I can play him, maybe I can't. And I'm looking at yesterday, and it's probably more the same, I guess. But I'm kind of feeling a little better about him than I probably did 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, I feel a little better about him. I mean, I think we know the game script is going to leave the Browns having to throw a lot. If they have to throw a lot, he'll be on the field more than Isaiah Crowell in those situations, even though Crowell hasn't been a complete ghost in the passing game. And that's one thing that I thought could lead Duke Johnson even more value, as Crowell as a pass catcher prior to last year was pretty much non-existent. But his role is kind of like leveled off as capable of contributing. And that was something that, again, I wasn't sure about. But I think with Duke, I've got him in a 14-team league. I mean, I play him about 75% of the time, because there's multiple flex spots. It's not a play I ever feel great about, but I usually feel like 8 points is the floor. It's a half-point PPR. I think in a full PPR, he's going to get you close to 10 every week, because If he gets you 50 yards from scrimmage or 60 yards from scrimmage, catches four passes, there you go. There's your 10 points right there. So it just doesn't take much for him in those full PPR formats to be useful. But I think he is one of those players that's so dependent upon what he does out of the backfield catching the ball that he doesn't carry much value in non-PPR settings. It's the leagues that are half point where he's even like difficult to decide on. Like, it's clear on the ends, but right in the middle of the curve with the half PPR, you're always left with kind of a tough decision with him because you may like a matchup for somebody else better.
Yep. Okay. We're going to go to Titans Colts. Again, the Titans are meh. They're in first place now. They're tied for first place in the AFC South, and they have the tiebreaker edge on the Jags, which doesn't mean a lot now. But they're still, you know, they squeaked by against the Colts, and they're just kind of, they're uninspiring. But we got to talk about them. Corey Davis, this is just, this is so frustrating. They didn't throw to him a ton. And we talked last week about the, you know, he was getting the snaps and getting the targets, and yesterday he kind of didn't get the targets. Even with Rishard Matthews out, which probably threw some people off. I mean, the Corey Davis experiment as a fantasy starter, we have to put on hold at this point. We just kind of can't. I don't think that next week the Titans have the Texans at home. I mean, in most cases, you probably got to have a pretty deep roster to want to start Corey Davis at this point.
Nah, with the Texans, though, I mean, they have been so soft against the pass. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those matchup-based calls where even though Corey Davis has been letting us down, and oftentimes it's with more target volume than what he saw yesterday, I still think you want to try and use him in a really nice spot like the one against Houston. But I think beyond that, he's going to be extremely matchup-dependent down the stretch. One problem is that they spread the ball around a lot. Decker's still there. He's healthy right now. Delanie Walker led the way with 63 receiving yards. He had the TD from Mariota. And then, of course, they have all their random guys, Harry Douglas, Taywan Taylor. They had a combined five targets yesterday. And Mariota only threw it 25 times.
Right.
I mean, he threw it 25 times through two picks, so he actually had 23 attempts that could have gone to one of his receivers. And, man, like I'm disappointed in Corey Davis, but I guess it's just that reminder, no matter how talented a rookie is, rookie receivers sometimes take a little extra time to find their footing. And he had the hamstring injury in the preseason. It flared up. It impacted him during the regular season as well. It's easy to see how it happened despite the talent. And then you throw coaching and scheme on top of all that. Yeah, I totally understand the frustration, but I think the Houston matchup in week 13 is the one where you say, look, I know this has been awful, but this should be a spot where Corey Davis can get me, you know, 70 yards, maybe a TD, because Houston's been just that bad.
The other thing I want to talk about is the Titans backfield. Derrick Henry. Henry and Murray essentially had the same, basically the snaps were split down the middle. I think it was 32 to 31 Henry. It was. The last four games. So Henry goes 13 for 79 on the ground. Murray goes 12 carries, 9 yards, and a touchdown. I think the touchdown, if I remember, I was watching it. I think they were both in the backfield, and Murray was sort of the lead back, almost lined up like a traditionally like a fullback would be. And they had been running Henry, and they gave it to Murray on a dive, and he scored. Because as I had Derrick Henry in a FanDuel lineup, which we'll talk about later, and I was a little annoyed. But if you look at DeMarco Murray, last five, okay, let's go last six games. 12 for 40, 18 for 59, 9 for 19, 14 for 42, 8 for 10, 12 for 9. Do you think we're at the point where the Titans are going to go, you know what, we just got it. We got to start changing the guard here a little bit.
They should. And I wonder, too, if Murray hit a hamstring injury that was popping up around the time they matched up with the Dolphins back in week 5. And he really hasn't played all that well in the time since then. But if you take away the big play he had against Seattle, remember that TD run against Seattle was like a 70-yarder or something. It was huge. The per-carry numbers in that game wouldn't have been good either. His numbers look almost identical to what they looked like during his one and only season in Philadelphia. And people aren't like smashing the table in declaration that he's done, but I think he's done. Like, I think the workload caught up to him. I mean, and maybe he's playing through an injury and that's why he's not good, and next year he can show us there's still something left in the tank. But if I'm the Titans, I'm trying to make that change now. I am trying to use Derrick Henry more down the stretch and make Murray the number two guy, because I think at this point, Henry just brings more to the table. And you need, if you're not going to throw it very well, you need to get more out of your running game. Henry averaging 4.6 yards per carry, you know, Murray a full yard less at 3.5. That's a big, big difference for that offense and getting first downs and winning the time of possession battle. So I think they have to make that change.
All right. Yeah. It's if I own DeMarco Murray, I'd worry. And you've been lucky lately because he's been scoring touchdowns with him. I mean, that's been good. He catches a few passes, which is nice, but the touchdowns have covered up the ugliness. Bills Chiefs. Oh my God, the Chiefs. I mean, this is what a disaster. What a colossal disaster this has turned into after the way they started. And we all thought that, you know, hey, maybe they've really done it this time. Maybe they've turned the corner. Maybe the offense is a little different. It seems like, you know, great analysis here. It seems like opposing defenses have figured them out.
Yeah. If you're Andy Reid, do you make the move to Mahomes now?
Okay. Do you follow Jeff Schwartz on Twitter?
I see his stuff because enough people I follow retweet him or favorite him and stuff like that.
He's been saying that, and his brother plays guard for the Chiefs, right? So,
he's getting inside man.
Yes, and he's been saying lately. Actually, I'm pulling up something. Hold on, let me see if I can find it. But he's been saying lately, no, this is not going to happen, right? And, you know, you're kidding yourselves. But that, you know, when they were 6-2 or 5-2 or whatever it was easy to say. And now the drums are certainly beating loudly in Kansas City for this. And he made a point yesterday. I mean, he joked around like, well, don't you think I might have some inside information on this, which is funny. But the other thing is, he said, the thing is, because they're so different, because Smith and Mahomes are so different. He said, you know, right now you'd be putting Mahomes into Smith's offense. And it doesn't necessarily work. And as long as they're leading the division, I doubt it will happen. Now, maybe he's wrong, but it's a good point that, you know, because Mahomes is such a big, strong arm that you would think when they make the switch eventually, whenever it is, which is, you know, next year or earlier, and we don't know what it'll be, that it will be more vertical than the Chiefs, because the Chiefs have kind of gotten back to being not so vertical lately, partially because of the way teams are playing them. They're basically, you know, saying beat us underneath again and big mess. I don't think they make the switch yet is what I'm trying to say. If they lose two more in a row, maybe. But I don't. But until then, probably not.
Well, there was I saw the end of this on Red Zone because I had Red Zone going all day. They were running screens to Charcandrick West just relentlessly as they were trying to get the late go-ahead score. I guess it would have been a game-tying score pending an extra point to go ahead. But how much of that is Alex Smith? How much of that is Andy Reid? Maybe there's some chicken and egg where with Smith, they don't want to throw down field, so Reid's more conservative. I don't know. Or maybe they're just too conservative because Andy Reid's system doesn't work. I honestly don't know. I think the takeaway that you just laid out there that they're too different as quarterbacks. I think that what that does for me is it undercuts how big an NFL playbook actually is. You know, like they have plays to throw the ball downfield. They just don't call them. Like they have to. Like
right.
They have to over the course of training camp and preseason and then regular season so far. They have to have had gone through all sorts of scenarios to be more prepared if something happens to Alex Smith where they could make the transition if they had to. But because they were playing well, because they were winning, I mean, they're 5-0, they didn't really think they'd have to make that call this year. I mean, they had the fortunate problem of a veteran quarterback playing in a level that was higher than anybody expected, and the league just seemed to be totally thrown off by it. They're not anymore.
Yeah.
And if you're the Chiefs, I mean, what do you owe Alex Smith at this point? Like, What's the goal here? Hey, like, what do you get by sticking with him? What's your best case outcome if you stick with him? Do you think now that the New England defense isn't leaking huge plays the way they were back in week one, do you think the Chiefs can go on the road in the playoffs and beat New England for the second time this season? Because I said it weeks ago, I just don't see that happening.
It certainly doesn't look that way right now, I agree. They look bad.
They look totally lost. I mean, what... we all loved Kareem Hunt this week. What is going on with Kareem Hunt right now? Like, why wasn't he even on the field when Charcandrick West was catching all those screen passes? Shouldn't those have been screen passes to Kareem Hunt? I mean, there's just a lot going on with Kansas City that I really can't figure out.
Right.
But Mahomes looked great in the preseason. Was he running Alex Smith's offense then, or were those the plays they were starting to build for him? Because even if you run a limited playbook with a guy that gives you a vertical threat, I think you're better off than trying to just check it down all the time and really playing with, you know, one hand tied behind your back, essentially, which is what it looks like they're doing offensively. I mean, Mahomes could take those shots downfield to Tyreek Hill. You can run some deeper routes with Travis Kelce. If nothing's there, he can create more with his legs than Smith can at this stage of his career. So it just seems like it's an upgrade across the board. Maybe you lose the locker room. I have no idea. Like, that's one of those things where unless you're there, you don't really know how much the team respects Smith versus how much they'd be, annoyed by as a first place team making that change at quarterback. But the Chargers are closing that gap. So they got to do something, whether it's a scheme change or a quarterback change. For me, I think it's the latter, because if they don't change anything, I don't think they can change the scheme that much with Alex Smith in it.
Right.
So I think you have to change personnel if you're going to adjust the scheme all that much anyway.
All right. Yeah. I mean, and it's, I wonder, it's, I would suspect it's hard to lose the locker room if you're in free fall already and have a bunch of people say, oh, well, we can't do this. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not there, but if you, you know, I mean, your argument, you can't say, you know, I mean, it's not like they're 7-3 and have won three of their last five games and the change wouldn't make any sense. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't know how ready Mahomes is, but I don't know if they're going to. I think they're going to have to free fall a little more to make this change. The other thing you mentioned, Kareem Hunt. Yeah, 11 carries for 17 yards, not catching the ball as much. Is he? I mean, they're going to the Jets this week. The Panthers, they put up a lot of yards, but yesterday on the Jets, but it was, you know, there was an end around and a big McCaffrey play that accounted for a lot of the rushing yards. So it was probably a little. I don't get fooled by that box score, is what I'm trying to say. Could you? At the Jets bench, I mean, would you be looking to bench Kareem Hunt if you owned him?
In a sense, yes, but mm-hmm. I also don't know what I'm going to have my bench that I actually like better. I mean, right. If we were ranking Kareem Hunt as a top three, top five running back when the Chiefs were 5-0, we're probably ranking him as a top 25 running back right now, like a low-end RB2. Is he even lower than that for you? Excuse me. Is he a guy that is now like a flex consideration?
Let me throw two names out there. I'm looking at the week 13 schedule. We have not, again, Monday morning, we haven't done rankings yet. Off the top of your head early in the week, would you start Jamal Williams or Kareem Hunt? Jamal Williams home against the Bucks.
If we're assuming that, yeah, Jamal Williams gets the same kind of workload because Montgomery and Jones and everybody else are still hurt. And thinking about the Chiefs matchup, wow, that's about where the line would be. And
okay.
I don't know if you're in a league where you still have trades until like the middle of this week, and a lot of leagues have had their deadline pass already, I think. If you threw Jamal Williams plus something else offer at Kareem Hunt, would that owner be tempted to take it?
Maybe.
I mean, the Williams role can shrink quickly if Montgomery gets healthy or if Aaron Jones gets healthy, but those are reasonable ifs. Jones is out several weeks. So with Montgomery, they rushed him back too quickly the first time. It came back to burn him. So, man, I thought the setup against the Bills was good. You know, the per carry numbers against Dallas and the Giants were okay, over 4 yards per carry. I just didn't get the volume against Dallas. But the TD drought continues. It's remarkable, and part of that's the Chiefs not being in a lot of great spots either. But 8 consecutive games without a touchdown after he had 6 in his first 3 games.
Yep. The other one that I was going to ask you, the other name is, all right, so we'll get to this in a minute. Damian Williams hurt for the Dolphins. If he's out, Kenyon Drake at home against the Broncos or Kareem Hunt?
I'd play Kareem Hunt. I don't think that's okay. A good setup for Drake. I mean, even though Denver's defense has taken a step back. So I guess in the first scenario with Williams, I'm making that call right now. I'm still playing Kareem Hunt, but man, that's close because Williams against Tampa should be able to do a little more damage. He's had a couple of tough matchups where he's got volume and he runs hard.
Yeah.
I don't think he's extremely talented. I think he's a solid NFL back, the kind of guy that might be around for a while, but I don't know if he's going to be, you know, a starter for years and years. I think he's more of a rotation back long term.
All right. Well, we talked about Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams. Let's go to that Dolphins-Pats game. Damian Williams' shoulder injury. Sounds like he's going to be out a while, you told me before we started recording.
Extended time, they say.
Okay. Kenyon Drake might be on tap for a bigger workload, so that's interesting. And his game's coming up. Denver at home, New England at home, at Buffalo, at Kansas City. On the other side of all the Patriots, you know what? I had to do picks this week, and I looked, and with the spread, I said, I'm not laying 17.5 points. Like, I'm not doing that in an NFL game here. And, you know, darn it, it was close. I didn't quite get there. This game, and part of it is because it was a blowout, I guess. But yesterday, at least, there was enough to go around for both Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead.
Yeah, and I think that had a little more to do with this game getting fairly lopsided earlier. It was 21-10 at the half. It was 28-10 at the end of the third quarter. They're not afraid to throw with Brady if they're up late. I mean, there's just certain times where I think they just want to get out of a game and grind it out. And that's what they did because they could. And Miami's been bad against the run. So exploiting the weakness also makes perfect sense in this one as well. So yeah, at the expense of Danny Amendola's production, I guess, it was Burkhead and Deion Lewis who did it. And, you know, James White has really seen his role diminish here in recent weeks. So he's become a guy that in full PPR, you're even thinking about sitting down, probably have been for a couple weeks, but easier to have the courage to do it after a game, which he had just four total touches for 15 yards.
Right. And Burkhead, both of his touchdowns were early. One of them, he went out into the slot at the goal line and caught a pass. But yeah, I agree with you. He's one of those guys who he's weird for me because the thing is, you're tempted to say he's a PPR guy, but he's not catching that many passes. He had the one game where he caught seven passes. The other ones, he's not catching a ton, and he hasn't run enough to overcome. I don't know. He's one of those guys that I'm at the point I have him in some leagues and I hate playing him. You know, I just don't. I'm not that interested in doing it. I did yesterday. I mean, I did it in the fishbowl, as we always talk about, but. And coming up for them at Buffalo, at Miami, at Pittsburgh. So not the greatest setup. I mean, at Miami, you could probably do, but their run defense is not, I don't have the stats in front of me. They're not terrible. At Buffalo, at Pittsburgh, they're just not great spots for the Patriots to start racking up the points, basically.
I mean, if they just repeat what they did to Miami yesterday and the next meeting, I think we're all going to be pretty happy with that. And the Steelers, I mean, we'll talk about them a little more at the end, but their defense looked weirdly vulnerable to big plays. So, I mean, if we saw anything in the Steelers squeaking out that win against the Packers yesterday, for me, the takeaway is that the Patriots are going to have no trouble with the Steelers. Like, just none, especially if that game's played in New England.
All right, Panthers-Jets. Greg Olsen left the game with the same foot issue that had kept him out for many weeks. After the game, the Panthers said it was soreness, it was precautionary, and we will know more on Monday. Hopefully that is true. I'm worried. Otherwise, in that game, we reached the point where if you own Robbie Anderson and Devin Funchess, you have to play them every week, right?
Yeah, and I know... our colleague Mario Puig was as high on Robbie Anderson as anybody several weeks ago, you know, kind of beginning of the season, even when the production wasn't there. But Robbie Anderson has scored in five consecutive games, six TDs during that span, at least four catches each of his last four games, 85 or more yards in three of his last four. He's the guy. I mean, you look at the matchup against Kansas City, that's a good spot. At Denver could be a tough one. That might be one where you think about sitting him down depending on the alternatives. The Saints in week 15, Marshawn Lattimore could be waiting for him there, and the Chargers in week 16. So I love the matchup in week 13, and it's all going to be about who you have as your next option in weeks 14, 15, and 16. I mean, I think he's looked really good. 9.6 yards per target, the TDs, the big plays, lots to like. But that's a rough fantasy playoff schedule for Robbie Anderson.
Yep, agreed. One other guy I want to mention in that game, Austin Seferian-Jenkins, who I, you know, he's been on some of my teams and I've liked playing him yesterday. 2 for 27, you'll see in the line. He dropped a touchdown and was the drop. I don't know if you saw the drop. I mean, he had one touchdown where it would have been a really nice catch near the goal line, and he came down and there was a little bit of a bobble. So they threw him in the red zone there. Basically, that was in the end zone. But the other one early in the game, he couldn't have been more wide open. And basically, the ball right in his hands, and he just dropped it. It was awful.
Yeah. The one, though, the overturned one, that's another strange one where it's like, really? That's not a catch. That wasn't enough.
Right. All right. That's it for that game. Bears, Eagles. So why did the Eagles trade for Jay Ajayi?
I'll never know.
I don't want to beat up on the Eagles. I mean, it's hard for me to say, oh, the Eagles don't know what they're doing. Clearly, that's not the case. But well, why? I don't understand it. It makes the way they're using him. I mean, they could have been just fine with what they had if they're going to use him like this.
So I don't know. Maybe they want him to continue to learn more about their playbook and to get more accustomed to the system before they increase his role. Maybe it's more for 2018.
Maybe.
I mean, that was one of the things that we mentioned at the time of the trade, is that LeGarrette Blount's on a 1-year deal, I think. So he'll probably be gone after this season, I would imagine. And then you've got Corey Clement and Kenyon Barner. I don't think Barner is necessarily back next year. Wendell Smallwood, maybe kind of on the fringe. And then Pumphrey and Sproles, I guess, could be competing for roster spots. But without Ajayi, that personnel group would be paper thin heading into 2018. With Ajayi, they have a guy that's done it before that would get a full offseason to get up to speed and then could presumably take on a much larger role next year. And maybe that happens down the stretch, but the Eagles are going to run through the little gauntlet here. They've got back-to-back road games on the West Coast at Seattle, at the Rams, mm-hmm. A lot of seeding implications in those two games. And then they go back east to take on the Giants on the road in week 15, Oakland in week 16 at home, Dallas week 17 at home. So, I mean, they probably, if they go 3-2 in their last five, I don't think anyone's going to be like freaking out. I think that would still be a pretty nice finish to their season. And they could even probably go 2-3 and people would say, yeah, they look good. You know, it's just the way it broke. They lost close games at Seattle and the Rams, and then they got upset by somebody else. I mean, Oakland may have something to play for in week 16, but maybe not. Anyway, I look at the Eagles. I think they are still, like, at this point, the most complete team in the NFC.
Yep.
Because the defense is also playing well. They're getting turnovers. They're stout against the run. At least they're good enough against the run. And I think when you look at teams that are kind of new to the playoff picture this year, like Jacksonville in the AFC by comparison, they don't have the glaring flaw that Jacksonville does. Like Blake Bortles is just a huge stain on an otherwise good team.
Yep.
The Eagles just don't have any spot where you look at their team and go, that's a major area of concern. Like they are just solid across the board. I like them better than the Rams. I like them a little better than the Saints. I think the Eagles are the NFC's best chance right now to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And the Vikings, if Case Keenum is real, the Vikings might be second.
Okay.
Because of the defense. I mean, the defense is really important. The Eagles are they're actually really good against the run. 3.5 yards per carry so far this season. I think only three teams have been more stingy, and one of them is Minnesota. So, yeah, like the idea of Keenum being in a shootout with Tom Brady to win a Super Bowl is a little nuts. But the Eagles are really good against the pass, too. 6.3 yards per attempt. Only the Jags have been better.
Right.
So I see Minnesota and Philadelphia as two teams that are like top five, top six against the run and the pass, and that can really play up in playoff time.
All right, folks, FanDuel is fantasy football for everyday fans with new contests starting every week. No busted seasons. There's something for everyone with lots of contests to choose from, and they start at just $1. Just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score real time. I mentioned earlier, I promised last week after we discussed Paxton Lynch and his matchup with the terrible Raider defense that I promised to start Paxton Lynch in the NFL Sunday Million, which I did. And it didn't go well. I stacked Lynch and Emmanuel Sanders, and I got a combined 5.34 points from them.
Well, you know, fortune favors the bold, just not every single time. So you took a swing and you missed. So you come back, you get back on the horse in week 13 and It'll be fine. Your bold move will work eventually.
You think so?
It has to.
All right. Julio in that lineup. That's the sad part. That's the part that's frustrating. I mean, he was 24% owned, 24.1, so it's not like I was the only guy, but you have Julio in a lineup and you think, you know, that's such a great head start the way he played. I had Julio and Le'Veon Bell.
That's a good foundation. Yeah, it was hard to cash without Julio this week because he was so high owned and did so much damage. But yeah, I think as long as you don't empty your bankroll before you hit on a bold call, you'll hit on one eventually,
I guess. And that was the idea because Lynch was so cheap, but whatever. And he ran a little bit. That was the exciting. Early on, he had what, 2 carries for 20 yards. And I said, hey, see, that's it. I mean, if he throws that's one touchdown and maybe runs for 40 yards, I might be in okay shape.
I didn't know Paxton Lynch was really known for his mobility. But he did 13 rushing TDs, I think, his second year.
I mean, he's a big dude, right? But supposedly, when he came out, they said he can actually, even though he's so big, but he can actually run a little. He's more mobile than you'd expect. So I think I'm remembering that correctly.
More mobile than you'd expect, which would describe pretty much everybody at RotoWire.
Wow.
You could put that in everybody's scouting report and it would be true. And it's people that are all like different ages and sizes and shapes. And yeah, we're all a little more mobile than you would think because we at a glance looked like we'd be terribly immobile. Why are the Broncos stacking the 6'7" quarterbacks, by the way, with Brock and Paxton Lynch on the same roster? They look like the downhill plane. Like it doesn't. I just think the NFL prototypical size for a quarterback thing is still one of those goofy things that people are looking for and that I don't think it makes a big difference. I mean, sure, if you have otherwise equal skills, would you rather be 6'4 or 5'11? You'd rather be 6'4 because you could see clearly over the giant lineman blocking in front of you. But that extra height in and of itself doesn't really do much for you skills-wise.
No. I mean, yeah, you don't need to be 6'7 over 6'4. But yeah, Lynch, we won't know about Pax. We'll talk more about Paxton Lynch later, but he's injured. We don't know what the status is yet. Over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing like FanDuel. I was not one of those yesterday, obviously. To take advantage of our special offer for new users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RW. You'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription plus a free entry into the NFL Sunday Million, which offers more than $1 million in cash prizes. And that's with your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/RW. Void where prohibited. Thanks, FanDuel. All right, Seahawks, Niners. We had a Jimmy G sighting at the end. And nothing against C.J. Beathard. I hope he's okay. But he got hurt late. Jimmy G came in with, what was it, 1.5 minutes left and threw a touchdown pass.
Yeah, they should have started him, clearly. I mean, the per-second production was elite from Garoppolo.
Per-second?
it seems like, though, like with the Niners, like they know how bad they are right now, and they don't want to, I don't know, they don't want to like shatter Jimmy Garoppolo's confidence by making him play on a terrible team and then have him go through the entire offseason just doubting his life. But they also sound like they're going to give him the franchise tag.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting because everyone's like, oh, well, he's going to be paid. He's the average of the top 5 quarterbacks. Yeah. But if he's bad, they don't have him as a big cap hit for the next several years. Like that's, I think it's kind of smart. Like, reasonably speaking, in their situation, because you get a 1-year period to evaluate a guy. It's not like, I don't think the Niners are up against the cap. They don't have that much talent. So that doesn't matter from a team standpoint. They're going to have a bunch of young players that they bring in next year to take on larger roles, maybe a free agent or two, but ultimately keeping him away from this terrible team could be a good idea. The only thing I would say that's an argument against that is if you think pieces that are on this roster right now are going to be important pieces next year. And that could be the case. Guys like Carlos Hyde, Marquise Goodwin, maybe more of like a 3 when you get a Garcon back, if you bring him back in or add a number one receiver or whatever. But I don't know. I tend to err more on the side of playing time against real NFL teams is currency and it's valuable and you shouldn't waste it on CJ Beathard if you think Jimmy Garoppolo is your starter next year. But there's a lot of moving parts, of course, so we'll see. We'll see what happened to Beathard, if he's actually going to miss time or not. And I'm guessing the fan base will be just feverishly calling for Garoppolo to get the start in week 13.
And Beathard said didn't think he tore, I'm reading from the RotoWire blurb, doesn't think he tore any ligaments, saying his injury could just be a bone bruise. It was a nasty looking hit. It was a, you know, they basically got both his legs on the way down. The Seahawks side, I mean, geez, with the Eddie Lacy. I was kind of hoping McKissick would get more work, even though he's a little guy, just because of he's clearly their best playmaker in the backfield. And they just let Lacy plod for, you know, junk for useless, not useless yardage, but it wasn't. It's just there's nothing impressive here. There's nothing. He's not good.
I would pick up McKissick if he's still out there in a shallow league. They've got to do something to get the running game going. You don't want to be one dimensional. I know Wilson can make a lot of plays himself. He had a rushing TD in this one, two through the air, one to Nick Vinette, but one to Jimmy Graham. Paul Richardson actually led them in receiving yesterday, seven targets, four for 70. And then Doug Baldwin was quiet, which was surprising to me. I thought he was a pretty safe cash play, easy top 10 receiver for this week, and it didn't turn out that way. Carlos Hyde in full PPR had seven catches, but only a total of 68 yards from scrimmage on 23 touches for Carlos Hyde.
Yep, that was not good. Yeah, he got, what, 13 targets or something in the receiving and passing game?
13 targets.
Yep, sounds nice. So Saints-Rams, this, it was a little lower score. We talked on Friday about how this was might be a little lower scoring than the over-under would have suggested. It was, the over-under was 54. So the Saints, I mean, the backs were still, you know, Ingram wasn't so great, but Kamara is, he's ridiculous. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's running a lot of routes too, like, which is pretty interesting. I mean, Mario mentioned this on Friday, or no, it was the Saturday XM show. I can't point it out how Willie Snead, since his suspension, hasn't been used at all. He got one more target yesterday. And he said, well, Kamara has basically just taken on the Willie Snead role plus, you know, more like he's doing back, you know, the number two back stuff plus Willie Snead stuff. And that makes a lot of sense because he's been basically the number two receiver most weeks. I know Ted Ginn had 11 targets yesterday and Michael Thomas had eight, but Kamara, this is a situation too, where I saw something scroll by yesterday. Mark Ingram has an out clause that is triggered if he's first team. Is it just first team all pro? I
yes.
think is what the designation is. If you're the Saints, you're like, well, it's kind of okay if that happens because Kamara's awesome and we'll just get another guy that can do some Ingram stuff. But I wonder if that sells Ingram short a little bit. You know, 2.8 yards per carry yesterday. He didn't do a ton yesterday. He also had a TD taken off the board. I forget what the penalty was. I think it was a hold or something. But Mark Ingram is a good player. And that was something we discussed when they had Peterson still in the mix, and didn't really make sense to us why the front office and Sean Payton didn't seem to like Mark Ingram as much as the rest of us.
Right.
And then Kamara was kind of buried early in the year. What took them so long to get him involved? I mean, he should have been involved from day one. I mean, at least they're doing it now. But clearly this is a Saints team that's very different. They had to play without Lattimore yesterday. Both their starting corners were out. Clearly that had an impact on how they were able to handle Sammy Watkins and Cooper Kupp. I thought this was a possibility. I didn't use him in DFS because I don't feel like the payoff is ever going to be that big. 8 for 116 on 11 yep. targets. I mean, he got a lot of volume without Robert Woods out there.
So interesting. And what happened there? So the Saints starting corners are both out, and you kind of looked at it before the game and said, okay, this could be a good spot for both Watkins and Kupp, and it worked out that way. So this coming week, Robert Woods still out. They play the Cardinals, and it's at Arizona. It's at Arizona. Rams at Cardinals. Presumably, Patrick Peterson draws Watkins, right?
Yeah.
So you got another double-digit target day coming for Cooper Kupp here. And I know, and basically we've talked about the off receiver with the car against the Cardinals has done well, like D.D. Westbrook did yesterday. He didn't do great, but he did okay. But the off, basically the, you know, Peterson has done a good job on the number one receivers, and the second receivers on other teams against Cardinals have done very well because the second corner is not good. I mean, I don't know that I'd want to go as far as starting Josh Reynolds from the Rams, because that's the number two. Kupp's a different guy because he's a slot guy, but I think Kupp's going to be a nice play this week.
Yeah, the setup for the next few weeks looks good for Cooper Kupp as long as Woods is out, because Watkins will draw the attention on the outside. and Cup will match up against slot corners and probably get some mismatches. And it just seems like Goff really has that trust with Cooper Cup, even in times where maybe he shouldn't. The question I have for you, though, with Sammy Watkins, 3 TDs now in the last 4 games, coming off a season-high 9 targets. That matches total from the last 3 games combined, though. Where are you at with Watkins? I mean, for the season, he's at 10.4 yards per target. He's had a few big catches that have really kind of bolstered that number. Should we be optimistic about Watkins down the stretch? The Arizona matchup is a tough one. Home against Philly, kind of tough. At Seattle, not as tough as it would have been with Sherman out. At Tennessee, and then if you're playing week 17, you get San Francisco. So he gets the easiest matchup at a time where few of us can actually use it outside of DFS. I mean, how do you feel about Watkins with that schedule?
I feel better. I think the people, and Mario would be better about this than I would be, but I feel like the reason that Woods was getting more looks than Watkins, it's basically that Goff was sort of staying out of trouble, that the better corners were with Watkins, and he was trying not to, and basically he was sort of taking this, it's the safe way out. This is very simplistic analysis, but it sounds like that's what was happening. And at this point with Woods out, he almost has to go toward Watkins more. I mean, again, like we said, this week, this is a hard one. I mean, Peterson on the road is a tough one. The other ones, Seattle sounded a lot scarier a few weeks ago on the road. Now it's not as scary. So yes, I do like Watkins more. I just don't know that week 13 is the time I'd want to bet on that. And the Eagles, maybe. I mean, I wish the opponents were a little softer. That's all.
Yeah, so. they don't give up much. So I'm sitting here, I'm looking at it, and got him in the NFFC, and I'll be playing in the toilet bowl corner of that, trying to get a little prize for contributions at the end of the year. Actually, I've got a shot to still make the playoffs on total points, but it's better chances than Lloyd Christmas, but worse chances than like a typical 100 person GPP. So I mean, yeah, a reasonable chance still, despite some shortcomings. But hopefully Watkins can go off and actually like justify the Rams making that trade for him, because I've kind of bought into the idea that Goff's trying to avoid huge mistakes. Sean McVay has been given coach of the year by Twitter. Do you agree with that? Is that appropriate?
Oh my God. Yes. He's coach of the decade now on Twitter.
What does this all say for, I mean, when you look at it, just how bad they were with Jeff Fisher, what does this really mean for Jeff Fisher?
It means he was really bad. I mean, it confirms our suspicions that he was really bad. And that the offense was, was just that it was stubbornness that held back their offensive football. I mean, not that Jared Goff was great last year. I mean, but to your point about Sean, about McVay, I mean, nice turnaround. That's fine. I mean, and Doug Peterson's waving his hand somewhere about the coach of the year thing. Saying, over here. Yeah. Hey, everybody.
Mike Zimmer. I mean, look at the injuries they've dealt with. Doug Marrone with the Jags. No one had the Jags playing this well. There's plenty of good candidates. And McVay is the coach that every team who doesn't like their coach wishes they had right now.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Jags Cardinals. Today, in things I never thought I'd say, the Blaine Gabbert to Ricky Seals-Jones connection seems legit.
Yeah, and there was a 2-tight-end league where I didn't pick up Ricky Seals-Jones. I could have started him because I don't have a good tight end situation. And now I will miss out because I have no fab left, and other teams do, and I'm sure they'll spend their little bit of fab left to get him. And I stayed away because the snap count was so low against Houston, which is stupid. The reason why it was stupid, the quarterback change and the personnel in the depth chart otherwise. Jermaine Gresham is not the long-term solution for them. Troy Nicholas is the guy that you'd be worried about maybe pushing him a bit more, but he's been in the league for a while. So if he was going to make his impact in Arizona, I think it would have happened by now. So I just didn't read that situation very well from a what could go right standpoint. And then the thing that broke the tie for me, I was looking at Austin Traylor, the trailer because Oakland's defense is bad and Jags defense is good. So I tried to play the matchups a little bit too much too, and just whiffed completely. Just a regrettable decision. Three TDs now in the last two games, 11 targets, seven catches, and 126 yards in total for Ricky Seals-Jones.
All right. Ricky Seals-Jones. Again, to say, I don't have the snap count in front of me. Sounds like it wasn't that high again. Blaine Gabbert's legit. I mean, he's like legit not terrible.
Yeah.
That you could play him in a 2QB league next week where you have 32 starters. I think I can play Blaine Gabbert. I think I'm convinced.
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I also think the volume sets up pretty well too, where you don't really look at them as a team that can just run it so well that they can have the 22 to 25 attempt game plan for Gabbert that actually gets them over the top. So yeah, if he's throwing it 30 plus times, he'll probably get you 230, 240 through the air most weeks. He gets the Rams coming up next week, and you can see the Rams, you know, putting up some points. And that, again, game script being favorable, Rams are at 6.9 yards per attempt allowed. So just a tick better than league average. So it might not be pretty from an efficiency standpoint, but volume wise, yeah, Gabbert could be all right. Another home game. They've got they're one of the teams that has a lot of home games on the stretch. Four of their last five up through championship week in week 16 at home in Arizona.
Yep. They've got their Rams, Titans, then they're at Washington, then home for the Giants. All right, Nick, the other one, D.D. Westbrook, I mentioned last week he boasted he was going to get 200 yards, and he didn't, and people were a little irrationally exuberant. Yesterday, 6 for 41 on 10 targets. And again, that was sort of the, you know, the offers, the non-Patrick Peterson person on the opposing receiving corps. So D.D. Westbrook, just keep your eye on him. This week, where are they this week? Hold, Jags must be home. They're home for the Colts. So matchup would argue that D.D. Westbrook is a consideration. We'll talk more about that tomorrow with Jake Litarski on free agent targets. Broncos Raiders. So that was interesting. As soon as it started, basically it was a rumble. It was like the scene in Anchorman with Spanish TV and the, you know, the machetes and tridents and all that. It was kind of fun to watch, I have to admit. Things about the Raiders here, you're going to have to watch this week. They're home for the Giants, whose defense is not bad, but now Janoris Jenkins might be hurt. But you might have Amari Cooper suffered a concussion, and we don't know the status. And Michael Crabtree legit might get a suspension after the way he acted yesterday.
Yeah, he's in danger of getting an extra game tacked on after the ejection. So it could be a lot of Marshawn Lynch, and then with Cordarrelle Patterson and Seth Roberts and Johnny Holton as your primary three receivers. I think it would mean good things for Jared Cook, who was surprisingly quiet in this game. Five targets, one catch, 1 yard. So I think Cook could be the player I like the most in the Raiders passing game for week 13, especially given the Giants' struggles with tight ends.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, watch for that. The other thing, I mean, the Broncos backfield, we'd love to figure something out. That game wasn't close for long. It got close at the end. Wasn't close. Booker was on the field 40% of snaps, but none of them did anything. I mean, it was just a disaster offensively for the Broncos. So we didn't get any insight on the Devontae Booker thing, I guess, right? He certainly didn't take over. We're not sure after yesterday if he's going to or not.
Yeah, that's one of those spec ads I made that I'm not feeling great about for week 13 at least. But looking at this, Trevor Siemian comes in relief, throws two TD passes, one to Cody Latimer, one to Benny Fowler, against one of the league's worst pass defenses. Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders combined for 8 catches and 30 yards on 14 targets. Holy cow. Like, what happened, Denver? Like, what is going on with your team?
Yep. It's bad. It's really bad. And again, that was one of those, you know, I watched via red zone, so I couldn't see a lot of it.
But that's how I saw it too. And every time they cut into that game, which was actually a lot because it was a small late afternoon batch like it usually is, I just saw Paxton Lynch looking like a guy that has no business being on the field in the NFL.
Right. Great. Well, you might not see him this week, depending on how his foot turns out.
I mean, I hope his foot's okay. How did teams look at him? Well, I mean, one at least looked at him and saw like a first round pick, future starter. How did they see that?
I don't know. I don't know, but I didn't see enough. So maybe a change. They're at Miami this week, so if he plays, maybe it's better. Packers Steelers. I mean, we talked about Jamal Williams, two touchdowns. Nice. Had a, you know, had one big play that helped, certainly. But we talked about how he's sort of, you know, in that line of low end RB2, I guess, top 25 ish, right on the border there is where we're going. If Montgomery's not back and all that. So,
yeah, I think if Ty Montgomery is still sidelined, Jamal Williams can be like an RB2 because the volume's been there. And again, he doesn't look like real explosive to me. I mean, he did take that, that screen to the house, but I think the ability to break tackles and then get that burst, it's just not there. That breakaway speed's not going to be there that often. The volume is so good right now. 21 carries for him. Aaron Ripkowski had one.
Right.
Trevor Davis had a designed like end around play. So he's the guy. And that volume puts him ahead of like an Adrian Peterson. maybe it puts him ahead of Kareem Hunt. I Kareem Hunt's just the shrug text emoji looking thing for me. Like I can't recall a player looking that good to start the year, and his production just keeps getting chopped in half for a few weeks. Like, it's so weird. Like, I'm baffled by Kareem Hunt.
Right. I'm baffled by Kareem Hunt too.
I have Jamal Williams. So if somebody in one of those leagues where we could still make trades wants to offer me Kareem Hunt just to see what I'll do, see if it'll make my head explode. Go ahead, send that offer.
I would like to see it. Somebody do that, please, if you're listening and you're in leagues with Derek. The other thing in that game, with Juju out, Martavis Bryant was playable. He got a touchdown, which, you know, made his fantasy productivity solid. He was 4 for 40 with touchdown on 6 targets. But basically, Roethlisberger, he literally threw 26 of his 44 passes to Antonio and Le'Veon Bell. So,
yeah, and yet he threw 7 passes in the direction of Eli Rogers. Now, when I watch the Steelers, Eli Rogers looks like a perfectly useful slot receiver. But when I see Martavis Bryant get targeted, I see him make a catch. I'm like, how do you not throw the ball at Martavis Bryant more than you throw it at Eli Rogers by comparison? How do you not want to do that as a quarterback?
I would think you'd want to, but yeah, Martavis, I think I wonder if there's a, you know, the quarterback's got to have a trust level with the guy too, right?
He does. And as a rookie, Martavis Bryant was running behind people, catching the ball downfield. And for some reason, they don't do that anymore. They took that play away. He's big and he's fast. Why wouldn't you want to throw to him? It'd be fun. It'd be easier. You could miss. You could be terrible and throw in his direction. He'll probably bail you out.
Maybe so. All right. Texans Ravens tonight. This smells like a blowout. I mean, so did Steelers Packers, and it wasn't. But this smells like a blowout, like a bad one. That the Texans, if the Texans don't score, if I wake up, I'll probably make it to the end tonight. But I get to the end and I look, and it's something to nothing. I'll go, oh well, yeah, right.
At what point do we look at the Ravens defense and say, wow, like this is actually a good enough defense where maybe they're a scary team to have to face in the postseason, because they're kind of like the Eagles, 6.4 yards per attempt. So, you know, a very small tick worse. And now the run defense is trending in the right direction with Brandon Williams back, 4.1 yards per carry on the season. Doesn't scare you. Only 6 rushing scores though. So if they end up trending more towards like a top 10 run defense and a top 5 pass defense, that's pretty darn good. Like, it's not an offense you like based on the way they've run it so far this year, but I don't know. They put up that 40 spot against the Dolphins. They shut the Packers out. I'm wondering if this defense is better than we gave it credit for throughout most of the season.
It's pretty good. I think as bad as their offense is, and Flacco's, he's just not good. You can see them. I think you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. You look and your first instinct is that their offense isn't good enough to win a playoff game. But then you kind of go, could they win in Nashville? Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. They could be. Yes. They can win the early Saturday playoff game.
Right.
Like that much I know. And then they can ruin the over under in a game the following week against the Patriots. Like they could do something like that.
Right.
Like that's about as much as they can do, I think.
Yeah. But they could win. Could they win at the Chargers? Yeah. Or Kansas City? Yeah. Probably. All right, so I have a PPR league. It's on Yahoo. I'm down 23, and I have Alex Collins. Yahoo says my chances of winning are 8%. What do you think? Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
That almost seems high.
Come on.
23 points from Alex Collins?
100 yards and a touchdown with 4 receptions.
Right? You'd still be short by 3.
Hold on. Let me see.
That's the problem.
Again, I don't have a 100-yard bonus in this league either.
Yeah, no bonuses. He's caught 7 passes all year, John. I don't think he's catching. Like, he caught 4 last week, so maybe he'll catch 4 again. But
you know, it's the bad thing is, in this league, I benched in the flex spot. I benched Marvin Jones for Collins.
So you would have won.
I would have won, and I benched Robbie, but I wasn't going to start. I benched Robbie. I benched Sammy Watkins, and I benched Marvin for that spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing working against you is that Danny Woodhead doesn't have a snap count this week limit. Snap count limit this week. So with that, Woodhead's probably going to take away some of those 7 targets. I mean, Collins had more targets against the Packers with the 7 than he had the rest of the season combined when he had 5.
All right, fine. Rain on my parade. Go right ahead.
He's got one game where he's rushed for more than 82 yards this season.
But they're going to win 27-0 tonight.
I think they will win easily.
Yeah,
I am just not confident in Alex Collins doing a lot for you. I hope he does for your sake. I think you're at more like 3% than 8%.
And it's funny, yesterday I jumped on Tim Haney's Facebook Live Q&A, and I asked him who I should play. And he said Deion Lewis, which I would have lost. But he was not on the I was still on the Alex Collins bandwagon here. I'm confident. I'm more confident than 8%, I'll tell you that.
All right. Well, hey, maybe this is the bold move that pays off for you.
I hope so. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Well, I'll let you know tomorrow on Tuesday's podcast with Jake. All right, everybody, listeners to our podcast can get a free 10-day RotoWire trial at rotowire.com/pod. No credit card needed. That lets you check out nearly all the features on the site. Check it out now, rotowire.com/pod. Derek, we've got waivers with Jake and I tomorrow on the podcast. Kevin Payne has his waiver suggestions coming up, I think, tonight, right?
Yep, late tonight or early. I think it's early Tuesday morning is when it actually gets posted, but it'll be done within the next 24 hours.
All right. It's going to be a lot of D.D. Westbrook, I have a feeling.
Just probably. Yeah. I'm not seeing it. But again, we talked about the speed and the things he brings to the table. That's obviously why people like him. But I Bortles is just the restrictor plate on that offense right now.
He really is. Did you see the interception, the Tyrann Mathieu interception?
I may have seen it. It's just not popping into my head.
I think he literally caught it. Bortles was kind of rolling to the right and tried to throw something near the sideline, and Mathieu was in front of him. I think Mathieu might have been 4 yards away from Bortles when he caught the ball. Like, he tried to throw it, and Mathieu was like, oh, it's going to hit me right in the face.
Outstanding.
That's great. And that's when you went, right, Blake Bortles. Right. Exactly.
Bortles going to Bortle.
Someone posted a Twitter thing yesterday that said, all Blaine Gabbert does is hurt the Jaguars, which I really liked.
That's all he can do.
All right, folks, if you like this podcast, we'd appreciate it if you leave us more reviews and ratings. Thanks a lot for the ones you've been sending so far. And thank you for listening to this edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by FanDuel. I'll be back Tuesday with Jake Litarski talking about free agents for this week. So come on back and check it out before you make your bids and pickups. For Derek Van Riper, I'm John Halpin. See you next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.